Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 168. I am Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning, partner.
And Phil Wilson.
Goober says hey.
Yeah. Oh, we lost Goober this lost past Goober. Week.
So actually, yeah. Goober says,
he says nothing.
You know, I got to tell you that...
Bear is missing.
Well, I used to, yeah. And Graham, that's right. Graham is, I don't know what he's doing this weekend anyway, but he's got adventures all the time on the weekend with his wife. So
it had something to do with crafts.
Something to do with crafts. Exactly.
With crafts. Yep. And opening the fishing opener.
Yes.
And opening the cabin.
Of which he doesn't partake of, but he opens the cabin.
So he opens the cabin. Yeah. Yeah. Well, gentlemen.
An epic ceremony, I'm sure. So lots going on this week in the world of search.
Yeah, what's up with our pals at Bing, Microsoft? Phil.
Have you had a chance to kind of play around with the new Bing? And, I don't have the social interaction piece yet, but I was fiddling around with the new Bing. They've really cleaned up the interface quite a bit. So it is a lot easier to get around in. Now, it's going to be divided, I guess, into three columns: the Bing knows, your friends know, and then the other, what is it? The search knows, or I don't know, whatever that
piece is.
But it's interesting. I popped onto Bing this morning just to kind of fiddle around and compare the two. And trending on Bing for some reason was Eva Longoria. Does anyone have any idea why Eva Longoria is trending on Bing?
Maybe it's some Cinco de Mayo thing.
I'm not complaining.
A little late for that.
Yeah, I'm not complaining about that. But I did find that. So I just searched Eva Longoria on Google to compare the two. The pictures on Bing are much hotter of Eva Longoria.
Well, okay. So here's what I thought was kind of interesting. So, Bing is connecting with Facebook and Twitter, right?
That's the news here, not Eva Longoria.
Yeah. And so, but the punchline is that, do I want to also open the kimono? I've already opened the kimono to Google. And do I want to open the kimono to Microsoft as well and let them have access to my Facebook and Twitter and all my contacts and all that? And most importantly, and actually the thing that I think is more interesting about Google Plus is that I think they can segment, they can essentially do what Bing is doing, but they can segment it by circles. So for example, I have a thought leaders circle and there are people that I respect in different spaces that I have in my thought leader circle. And I would much rather do a search that would define it by category. Cause God love everybody that I'm connected to in Facebook, but when I'm out doing specific seeking on something, I don't really care what most of them think. And the same thing with Twitter. I don't care what everybody thinks. I care what a segment of my connections think.
Well, both of those services offer segmentation. I mean, you can do a friends list, you can do a list on Twitter, you can segment your other social streams.
But that's not how Bing's connecting.
But the downside with Google Plus, right now, give it some time. But the downside with the Google Plus is it's just Google Plus. And great. Nobody's using Google Plus yet. Granted, you could say yet, but it's still a pretty elite sort of a group of people. It's not as huge. I mean, 170 million on Google Plus as opposed to 900 million on Facebook. And Steve, if you have no problem opening up your kimono, which is a lovely image, by the way, and one will haunt me the rest of the day. If you're willing to open up your kimono to Google, why the hell wouldn't you open it up to Microsoft?
That's a good point. But
you're getting bashful now?
No, it's that I know what I can and cannot do with Google, for example. And maybe it's just that I'm more adept at it. But I know that when I have all these services open in Chrome, Google has an understanding of what I'm doing in all of those different tabs. And I can open up Firefox, which I have basically everything blocked, ads and everything, and do different searching inside Firefox. Now, I have to do that a lot because I don't want, you know, I want to have clean generic searches sometimes. I don't want the searches to be contextual based on stuff I've searched on in the past. And so the more that Google learns about me and my search history and the kinds of things that I seek and so on and so forth, they narrow the search results down. And sometimes I don't want that. Sometimes I want to see what other people see when they do a clean search, if you will, for what one of my clients is doing. So when we were doing SEO for one of our clients, you know what I mean? So it's like this is kind of a double-edged sword.
Well, you just open up one of the incognito browser windows to get that, though.
Well,
so you can get regular plain vanilla search by just doing something like that.
That's true.
Incognito, what?
Well, private browsing.
Private browsing.
In Chrome, or are we back on Firefox?
Well, Chrome calls it incognito mode or something like that. What do they call it? Incognito?
Incognito,
It's under the little wrench on the right-hand side. It's called incognito window.
Ooh. Yeah, but one of the reasons that I do the Firefox thing is that I have a bunch of plugins like Ghostery and a bunch of others that are selectively turning off analytics and ads and so on.
You can put Ghostery on Chrome, too.
Well, you can, but you can't do it then with incognito mode like Tim just described.
Right.
So I know we're getting really geeky and narrow here, but.
But anyway, well, I found it interesting that it looks like everybody is banding up against Google, behind Microsoft, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, they're trying to.
Microsoft used to be the Google, and now they're sort of like the underdogs coming after big bad Google.
Well, you know, on a grander scale, I got to tell you, you got to be kind of impressed with all the stuff that Microsoft is doing. You've got Windows 8 coming out. You got the Windows Phone upgrade, changed. You've got all of this going on with their Bing search product. You know, what somebody like woke these guys up and said, hey, it's time to get back in the game. I mean, does anybody else get that feeling?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I mean, I think that they really came to the realization that we're no longer relevant, that nobody even talks about us.
Yes, exactly.
And we got to get our act together. And they're taking a lot of steps, and they're still not taking all the risks that maybe they should, because they, with Windows 8, there's going to be the faux tablet version that will sit on top of the real operating system, and because they've got billions of geeks out there that want to be able to get under the hood. It's one of those things where it's really hard to drag your legacy along, and Microsoft has a huge legacy, and so it's harder for them, I think, to break out. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's nice to see them taking like with Bing. This is an area where there really isn't a lot of legacy, so they can really vault forward. Same thing with Windows Mobile. So I think you're right, Phil. Hey,
and Bing celebrated the birthday of Minnesota the other day by posting a Twin Cities cover page. Did you see that?
I did not.
Oh, I tweeted about it. Come on. It was a beautiful thing. It was very nice. It was a picture of the bridges and, that sort of thing. So the Stone Arch Bridge. It was a very nice picture.
Well, so does anybody know, Tim? I mean, since you do so much in the marketing space and that's your strong suit amongst us, especially, when you do search engine optimization sorts of things, how much segmentation do you do in terms of strategy with Google and Bing, for example? Or do you treat them the same?
I tend to just look at what the Google results are, and I don't really look at Bing that much. And I think with the changes here, I'm going to change that, and Bing is going to become more important than it has been.
Okay.
And I think that this whole social search thing is a different sort of animal, and needs to really be optimized for in a different way than we've been doing. So it's going to be interesting to see how SEO changes as both Google and Microsoft add, social layers to what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, all I can say is it's great to have competition.
It's always good to have competition.
It is. It is. Yeah.
So speaking of people doing things behind the scenes with Google, what's the deal with this Apple dropping Google Maps? Now, we've known about that for some time, about the OpenStreetMap. There's been rumors about them moving toward that, but now it looks like all the rumors are really strong.
With iOS 6, they're about to drop, alpha or beta on their developers. It looks like from the early versions of it that the Maps application in iOS 6 is not using Google Maps. It's using an internal Apple-developed or Apple, somehow figured out how to use OpenStreetMaps and other technology that they've acquired over the last few years.
Been buying up a bunch of companies, yeah.
And it's going to be a 3D sort of experience as opposed to the way that Google Maps is now. So mm-hmm. that'll be interesting to see how they do it, and that'll certainly change the dynamics of mobile mapping and further segment iOS away from Android.
Well, I know it was really nice when I went to Europe I downloaded some apps that were using OpenStreetMap. And so you could right before you left, you could sync up your phone and it would load. If there was any changes in that specific map, you could load it. And so I would load the cities we were going to. So I had Berlin and Munich and Frankfurt and all these cities. And you could run these maps offline using the GPS in the phone. And so because I didn't want to use a data connection, obviously, because of the cost. And so I've had a little bit of experience with OpenStreetMap and actually using it. And it's pretty good. I mean, I was kind of surprised. I thought, well, no, it's not going to be all that accurate and things of that nature. But it's like a Wikipedia. There are so many people involved who are doing the mapping. And they are caring about certain things. So I looked at this area where my great-great-grandparents had come from in Germany. And here somebody had mapped one of the parks. And they had it, had it by meter. You know, all the trails in the park and everything else. And, I mean, you wouldn't find that in Google Maps.
Well.
Maybe you would.
Well, yeah, maybe you would. I don't
know. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting to just see the different. The one thing that always comes back to me when one of the reasons I've chosen Android over iOS is that navigation piece that you don't pay for in Android and you have to pay for in iOS. Is this going to change, the turn by turn navigation situation with Apple, or is that still going to be a paid feature?
No, it's going to be part of iOS 6. So just like now you get Google Maps with iOS 5, you're going to get the Apple Map application. So it'll be free. And now it's not clear if they're going to have the same sort of traffic information and all the other real-time stuff that Google has, but they might.
Yeah.
It's clear that they're in direct competition with Google. And Apple is just one by one, they're just taking all the Google content out of the iPhone, except, obviously they're still allowing Google apps to be in their app store. But
right.
Other than that, all the content that's part of the iPhone as it comes in is being removed. And Maps is a key part of that. So it's clear that Apple and Google are in serious war right now.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot at stake.
They're always at war. Yeah.
But there's, there always should be two companies leading. So, I think that Apple would like to, at some point, just eliminate Android from the earth. And I don't see a third option emerging. If there was a third option, I think that Apple would prefer to compete with that. Let's say it's Windows 8. Mm-hmm. They prefer to compete again with Microsoft than they would with Google. There's just so much bad blood between the two companies.
Well, let's shift gears on the mapping thing just a hair. And one of the things that had really exploded when Google Maps first came on the scene was, they had an API and the map mashups just exploded. where you could use your own data set and you can obviously do a lot of that with OpenStreetMap, but there's not a more formalized program and a more formalized API set for OpenStreetMap. And I think about, you know, the stuff that has emerged with Google Maps and how many people use it. And there are plugins for, you know, embedding it in WordPress sites, you know, and there's just all kinds of stuff around that. And does that mean that Google Maps will continue with so much momentum? And most importantly, what's Microsoft ultimately going to do? Because there's nobody better at partnering and having developer programs than Microsoft.
That's a good question.
Okay.
I don't have an answer for you. That's a good question.
Say it again slow.
No, I just didn't have an answer slow. For you. I was hoping that Phil had an answer for you.
I don't have an answer. I'm sorry. I wish I did.
Come on.
Wow.
Do I have to answer my own questions?
Not to make something up.
Stump the panel.
Steve, go ahead. You obviously have an answer on your own. Go ahead and just spit it out, son.
Well, I think that's what makes mapping so great is you have so many people that are building apps on top of it or incorporating it into apps and things of that nature. And that's what really makes the mapping application or technology or platform so much better.
And you're insinuating that you won't have that opportunity with Apple.
No, I don't think so. Not with OpenStreetMap. I don't see anywhere near the amount of momentum. And, you know, it's not like I'm doing a quantitative analysis of how many developers are developing in OpenStreetMap versus Google Maps. And, you know, that could shift, too, with Apple's involvement and Apple actually having it in iOS. I mean, maybe that'll, you know, move forward pretty quickly, but I still think, you know, based on the Bing discussion earlier, is that Microsoft is the wild card in this thing in terms of what they're going to end up ultimately doing and who they'll get behind. If they get behind OpenStreetMap and they figure out and build an API or build it in more into a accessible platform for development, the tide could turn on mapping.
You mean Apple?
If Apple and Microsoft.
Oh, okay. I don't see Microsoft doing the OpenStreetMap thing.
Okay.
I would see them continuing down the road of something proprietary and maybe even better than that. It's surprising to me that Apple is going after it because Apple's not traditionally a big open source advocate. So there must be not a lot of alternatives to what Google has built up.
Yeah.
Well, I think Apple has to go with the open source route because they just don't have enough money to develop it themselves.
Yeah, it's very costly.
Sure. Yeah. You know, they just don't have that kind of money laying around.
No, it would cost, you know, tens of billions of dollars, and they only have, what, $100 billion?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. How could they possibly spare that kind of cash?
Well, there is, you know, a justification where there's so much synergy in using OpenStreetMaps that they get more bang out of it.
Well, I think it has.
And they would if they did something proprietary.
Has more to do probably with time than cost. I mean, tapping into open source allows you to tap into many, 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 many people developing, and it tends to accelerate the development. So rather than you know, building a team yourself and going that route. So I think that probably has a lot to do with it. It's the next closest thing to Google Maps, right?
It is.
It is, definitely.
There you go. There you have her. So we'll have to wait and see. So what's I'm sorry, I have fallen behind on Apple releases. We've got WWDC coming up. So that will be OS 6 rollout. Is that what we're saying?
iOS 6, yeah.
iOS 6, potential for the Apple TV. There's also potential for an announcement about the iPhone 5.
But the iPhone 5 is more fall, we're thinking.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I would think so. And the next version of Mac OS, too. I'm sure they're going to talk about that.
Mountain Lion, yeah.
Yeah, at WWDC is what you're saying, which is...
Yeah, I think it's going to be Mountain Lion and iOS 6 are going to be basically the two things.
The big shoot match, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think there's going to be really anything else, but supposedly they're working on some other breakout products, but traditionally they hold those for the fall, you know, for the...
I thought of you the other day, Tim, because I saw a substantiated rumor that Apple is actually going to do a 7-inch iPad.
There's no way.
Yeah. That's the first thing I thought, but
I just don't see it. But you know, that stranger things could happen.
Then the argument ensued that it's not really going to be a 7-inch iPad. It's going to be a 7-inch iPod. So it's like, oh, come on.
Yeah, no. That would actually make more sense to me.
It would make more sense, yeah. An iPod
what the hell's
Touch.
The difference, boys?
Well, because of the segmentation.
Whatever. In fact, I would think it would be better to be 5 or 6 inches big because you'd want something that would be large enough to be an e-reader. And also a nice device to play games on, but not necessarily something like an iPad. So you could scale your apps, your regular iPhone apps, up to it. And it could be a really nice little e-reader that you can put in your pocket. So my guess would be a larger iPod Touch, maybe 5-6 inches, something like that.
Must not make inch jokes.
Phil, you and I, our brains are wired identically. I'm thinking to myself, you know why flight attendants, there's one of those jokes about size. Anyway, never mind.
You should not go there.
Exactly.
Not make inch jokes.
All right, let's instead talk about something else that somebody inserted into the outline for today's show, which is, are smartphones spreading faster than any technology in human history?
Why, yes. And the answer is yes.
And the answer is yes. Well, I will tell you that the thing that blew me away was Mary Meeker's State of the Internet presentation at the Web 2.0 Summit.
Are you seeing her? Is it because you bring up Mary Meeker a lot? Are you got something going on with her?
Hardly.
Okay.
Except she calls me for information. But anyway. Really? For analysis.
There's that fantasy life coming.
That's right. That's right. When she was at Morgan Stanley, the data that they would accumulate was absolutely unbelievable because it was global in nature and it was the industry overall and it was growth rates and all of that. And the iPhone at that point had been the fastest adopted technology ever. And the ramp rate for sales on the iPad was even faster than the iPhone, even though they felt that the iPhone itself would have more traction overall. But then when you look at the smartphone category overall and you look at how well Android is doing, especially globally, it's like, you know, is everybody going to have a smartphone in 10 years? In the globe? Probably.
Yeah. Because in a lot of places, it's their computer. That's it, all they have.
Precisely.
Well, you got to remember that the Asian market, Japan especially, have really always had smartphones. They call them feature phones, but they've always been sort of advanced feature phones in our world. So they've got that technology. They've got a big head start. So I think that, the smartphone is a natural, I think. So I'm not surprised by the growth of that.
Well, I will tell you that have a family that I know who are not doing all that well financially, and they don't have internet in the house. They don't have a computer, and they all have smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because and they're all Android phones. The reason they do is because they have to have email, and they have to have web browsing, and you know, and so on and so forth. And it's all on the phone, and the phones are cheap in comparison, and so. You know, and apparently that's one of the big areas of adoption is people that can't afford a cable connection or a DSL connection and a computer in the home and so on. But then when you look around the world, you know, how many countries the people can't afford, you know, hundreds of dollars or $1,000 for a computer and then a connection if they could even get one.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you look at it, you can go into any Walmart or Target and get an Android smartphone for $150, $200, you know, no contract, pay as you go sort of thing. And I think that the plans are something like $30, $40 a month for all you can eat everything. So that, as far as a value, is really a good value if you can, you know, if that's your computer. And the even the low-end Android phones are actually pretty good these days, you know, fairly functional.
Well, I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but one of the frustrating things about traveling, and my daughter's going to Mexico for 3 weeks to do this Spanish full immersion program down in a town south of Mexico City. And I've been doing analysis now for about a week on mobile plans and how to get her a data plan and yada, yada, yada. And if anybody that's traveled and tried to actually use their data plan anywhere, it's like, forget it. You know, it's hundreds of dollars just for, a month. And for her, it would be $200 for 800 megs of data. That's a lot, but she uses about 2.5 to 3 gigs a month.
So that's through AT&T?
That's through AT&T, and Verizon is another plan. She's even thinking about getting an iPad for the Verizon on the Verizon network, because then she could use it down there as well. And they've got a slightly better deal, $25 per 100 megs. So overall, it would be less if she went over the 800 meg amount.
Well, you know that the Verizon iPad has a GSM SIM micro SIM slot in it,
which is why she would do it.
That's totally, it's not carrier locked at all. So you
could, it's not.
No, that's the reason to buy the Verizon version, because you still get GSM. Now, the GSM does not work in the U.S., so you couldn't like put a T-Mobile GSM SIM in it and hope that it would work. But if you're traveling internationally, if you go to, I think, Canada, and I'm pretty sure Mexico, it would fall into that, you can buy a SIM from a local provider that should be a lot less expensive than if you go through your, you know, AT&T or Verizon directly.
Once again, I learned something on the Minivate Gang podcast.
Yeah, no, I would investigate local, GSM providers and see who offers a micro SIM. Because my son is going to be studying in London, and so we're unlocking his G2, and he'll just buy a micro SIM there as a, you know, pay as you go thing, and for the 6 weeks he's there, he'll have service. And that's a lot less expensive than using something else. Like, I've got a True Phone SIM, and they're like a global phone service. And it's handy to have if you just need calling or texting services for a few days while you're overseas. But it's quite expensive. So if you're there for any length of time, that doesn't make sense. And really getting a local SIM is the way to go. When we were in France last summer, for instance, you could go in any post office and you can buy them, and they were like 15 euros and they were good for, I think, a month, something like that. And they had, you know, a certain amount of talk time and text time. And I think they even had data on it, and you just buy them and throw them in your phone.
That's pretty cool.
You have to have an unlocked phone, of course.
Which, right, right.
Yeah,
well, so this just came out, I think yesterday, that the European Union, the European Parliament, has mandated that mobile data roaming costs are going to fall. And they've been coming down, you know, the data roaming charges have been coming down anyway. But this has always been, this is also one of the reasons why Skype's done so well in Europe. Because, I mean, if you're, you know, 10 feet across the border in some other country, and you call across the border, you know, it's not only a long distance call, but it's, you know, they tack on another 50 cents a minute or something. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So people use Skype, and it's really tough for people who live there to go from country to country and try to do mobile data roaming and do it affordably. And so what I'm hoping for is at some point that we'll be able to move about the world with our smartphones and not have it be some gigantic delta in cost to do so.
After everyone rolls out LTE, I think it's going to be, you know, that will be easier to do, because now we've got, different standards for data networking around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like everyone's pretty much rolling out LTE that's fairly compatible. So you will be able to get, say, an iPhone or some sort of Android phone that has a radio in it that is compatible with all the bands of LTE. In fact, the T-Mobile, who has not been compatible with the 3G network with the iPhone, will be compatible when they finish their LTE rollout. So you'll be able to go into the Apple Store, buy an unlocked iPhone, the upcoming iPhone that supports LTE, mm-hmm. and use it on T-Mobile, and it'll actually get their LTE network. So it'll be the same spectrum as what AT&T and Verizon are using. So it'll allow you to move between carriers a lot easier and use the same devices. You won't have to switch devices like you do now in many cases.
You know, yesterday I did a post about the U of M paying professors $500 to review open textbooks.
Yeah, what's that about?
Well, I mean, you know, there's the whole open courseware initiatives that are going on with Stanford, MIT, and other universities and colleges, the open textbook initiative. And it's because costs are continuing to rise. As the market shrinks, college textbook companies are increasing prices, just like the cigarette companies did, right? And what I think about with this smartphone adoption globally and all this free courseware that's available, you know, Khan Academy and so on and so forth, what is that ultimately going to do when people around the world have these very powerful computers in their pockets and have access to learning at the level that will be available or already is, but, you know, is going to continue to move forward? And, you know, what's that going to do to the world when we can just pick up these devices and look stuff up, learn stuff on the fly?
I think that most people still watch the Kardashians.
Phil.
I would hope that that a more educated world would develop from that. But I know that's where you were going. But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
One would hope.
One would hope.
They signed for another, what, 2 or 3 years? My God, why?
Yeah. See, I did not even know that.
Yeah. Hey, I've got a 13-year-old girl. How can I not know this stuff?
You know, you're right.
It's true. So
when you guys bond, you sit and watch the Kardashians and other shows like that?
Yeah, not really, no.
No, okay.
Phil says he remembers when Bruce Jenner was just a track and field guy.
And he had a regular face.
And he had a regular nose, yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Before he met some really bad plastic surgeon.
Well, hey, let's talk about gadgets for a second that connect up with smartphones, in fact. And Phil, did you get your smartwatch?
No, not yet. No,
not Apple? Yet?
No.
Yeah, so
tell us. It won't be available till fall.
I mean, oh,
basically,
okay.
The way the Kickstarter stuff works, and we're specifically talking about the Pebble watch, the way Kickstarter works is that you pony up your dough now and help fund the company. And one of the perks of funding this company is being the first to get a watch. And they said they're looking at shipment of probably September, October, because that will actually, when it's actually produced. And they have sold out of those watches.
Right. As 85,000 of
85,000, yeah. The founder was on the VergeCast yesterday, and I'll put a link in the show notes. And they're making orders for, you know, all the components, and there's fairly long lead times to do all this stuff. So he's hoping that he's able to, to make all 85,000 this year. So all the backers get them. And it doesn't sound like anyone else like me and Steve that didn't get in on the deal will be able to get one until sometime next year.
I'll just speak for myself because I'm a loser that I didn't, that I didn't bother to.
You know, I was talking to Tim about this earlier, and, you know, I'm a watch fan. I'm not a watch collector. I'd love to be able to be a watch collector because, you know, you have to have a lot of dough for that. And I don't own necessarily any quote unquote timepieces, but I like watches. So when I saw this, I thought, well, this is kind of cool. And it's not overly expensive. If you look at I got in at the $115 level, not the $99 level, but, yeah. And it's kind of unique to see, how this will play out. As I told you last time, I'm still concerned about this connecting to my Android device via Bluetooth. So there's one more, you know, bit of energy suck going on in my already poor performing battery. But
let me just interject there. Bluetooth 4 actually uses less energy than the current spec.
Well, I agree, but at the same time, still.
Phil doesn't have a phone that supports Bluetooth 4.
Yeah, there's that.
No. All right.
Well. Did you get a new phone, Phil?
No, I have not gotten a new phone. I'm kind of waiting for the 5 just to see what it looks like. So.
iPhone.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily committing to the iPhone 5 at this point in time, but I've got my Evo 4G is working fine, and I can wait to see what's out there, and there's a lot of good gadgets coming out. So and let's get to that here. But also one more thing on Pebble. The one thing that I've liked about this process, going through this Kickstarter investing process, as small as that investment is getting the updates from the company that I've backed to very nominal extent. And I get emails once a week, maybe 3 times a month, that basically tell me where we are in the process, where they are in the process. And, you know, when the founder says, I just wrote a check for the biggest amount of money I've ever written in my life. It's kind of fun to be part of that, even though it's a very small piece of it. So anyway, speaking of gadgets, we have a little gadget fest that we want to get into, don't we? We got lots of new stuff rolling out here.
All right. So let's launch into Gadget Fest.
Okay.
All right.
We got gadgets. And this is
most of them are Android phones.
Yeah.
Actually. I threw a little Apple in at the end just because, you know.
Just as far as
can I ask you two guys a question?
We already did our allotted time, so we fulfilled our contract.
So let me ask you guys something because I get this question often, and I have no answer for someone because I'm not in the space. I'm not buying Android phones. But there are so many phones or so many new phones, and there's various iterations of the operating system. How do you guys recommend what someone should buy? So like, here's the new Samsung Galaxy S3, which looks really hot.
And makes coffee for you.
Is it out yet?
No, it's not out yet.
Okay.
But it was just announced a little less than a week ago. And it is the new flagship for Android phones. But a lot of people have been somewhat disappointed because although the internals have been revved since the Galaxy Nexus, the screen isn't quite as good as people expected. And the industrial design is a little clunky. And
the
a lot of people
not as good as it should be.
Well, the camera is okay, apparently, but it's not. Yeah, it's just not blowing your head off or anything. A lot of people thought that the design itself, the industrial design, was designed by lawyers so that Samsung would not be, you know, sued for this particular, for ripping off Apple.
That's actually kind of funny.
So yeah. they've made.
Just concessions. Just make it any way you like, just so it doesn't look anything like an Apple device.
Right, right. So what's interesting is HTC introduced their One series. They have the X and the S, and the difference is the S is slightly smaller than the X is, and there's some other differences as well. It's smaller, 4.3-inch screen. Smaller now. That seems a little ridiculous. Yeah. But a lot of people are saying that HTC has really taken this round from Samsung as far as leadership in both design and function of their phones. So they're the ones to get right now. The One is the one to get.
The One.
And the HTC One. Okay.
Yeah. And the One X is apparently the better one, but it's, a phone that's almost 5 inches. I mean, it's 4.
It's huge. Yeah.
4.8
something.
4.8, just like the Galaxy S3. I think that for me, that's too big. I mean, 4.3 is really large, and I've seen the One S, which is the one that's on T-Mobile, and that may be my next phone, but it's still almost too big for me.
And that's the one with the, how big is the screen in the 1S? It's the
4.3. Like
4.3, yeah. Which is what my Evo is. So.
Yeah, to me, 4 inches is really the sweet spot. I'd rather have, you know, a tricked out four-inch size.
Size jokes. Must not make size jokes. Go on. So, yeah, and but.
The 1X is under, on whatever that phone company you're on, Phil. What is it? Oh, Sprint. Sprint. Right. They're calling that the Evo 4G LTE. And it includes LTE even though they don't have a network built out yet, which is kind of funny.
It is interesting.
Yeah. Well, they're future-proofing their customers, right?
So some podcasts ago you asked for a recommendation, Phil, and I think that's the one for you. The Evo 4G LTE is that's your phone because it's future-proof because it has Sprint's LTE network on it. You can still use their great 3G network that I hear is just wonderful today. It doesn't have WiMAX, so that's kind of a drawback. So you'd actually be,
kind of back. Stepping back for right
stepping
now,
back right? And hoping that the Twin Cities gets LTE pretty soon.
Because why I use WiMAX all the time.
Oh, you do?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not at all. Not at all. But I mean, you're missing the most important part, though, Tim.
Yeah,
it has a kickstand.
True.
True. Which strikes me as just.
Well, didn't your original Evo have?
Yes, it does have a kickstand. Oh, okay. But for one thing, the kickstand in the original Evo doesn't really hold up the phone very well. I mean, it kind of tilts when you put it up there. So I don't use it much other than just to kind of play with it. But the kickstand thing is just what's still disappointing to me in the HTC is the camera still sucks. Relatively speaking, I'm sorry. You know, when I look at pictures and photos taken by my kids' iPhones, and I compare it to my Evo 4G, which is what was that, an 8 megapixel? I can't remember. Was it 8 or a 5? I can't remember. But they suck. The photos that my Evo takes suck. The video that my Evo takes sucks. So, I'm looking for, you know, that sort of thing being better. I appreciate a faster processor. I appreciate the kickstand and the design of the screen size is okay. I don't necessarily want to get any bigger than a 4.3 because then it just starts to become cumbersome in my view anyway. So, and I don't that much video on my phones.
I just want to just mention one thing that the Verge's coverage of these devices is awesome.
That is.
Yeah.
Huge photos, great video reviews. So if you want to look at new tech, go to theverge.com. And we have links in the show notes to these Android devices, but I'm really impressed with how they've put this site together.
Yeah. They're the guys that left Engadget about a year ago.
Right.
And they wanted to really take forward the whole Gadget blog. And they've really done that.
I think so too.
They've created something that is new and fresh. And they post, you know, like 50 posts a day. It's crazy.
Well, and they do an incredible job. I mean, the depth of coverage on this one phone is incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, if you scroll down the page, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's updates and updates and updates and updates.
Yeah, they really blew out the Galaxy S3 coverage. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that Galaxy S2 was a nice phone. I mean, when we were looking at picking up a new smartphone for my son, it was, you know, we were looking at the 4S against the Galaxy S2, and it would, you know, had it not been that monster screen, I think that it would have been more of a contender, but at least in his eyes. But then again, in a 17-year-old's eyes, it's an iPhone. You got to have the iPhone. So, so the Samsung Galaxy S3. When is that set to launch? Is it mid summer?
It's coming out in Europe later this month, and then it's supposed to be sometime in June here in the U.S.
And then the 1X and the 1S is available.
Yeah, both are out now. The 1X is on AT&T and the 1S is on T-Mobile.
Right. And then the same phone, which is now labeled the Evo 4G, is on Sprint.
Evo 4G LTE.
Excuse me, the Evo 4G LTE.
Deluxe.
Even though they don't have the LTE network. Okay, good.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, though, listening to you guys, I can see why people that aren't into it and really doing the studying are like, screw it, I'll just go buy an iPhone.
You know, the problem with Android is there's so many different choices. And, you know, it's, you know, if I wanted the One X, for instance, I'd have to go to on AT&T. One good thing about Samsung is that they're covering all the carriers. So if I want to get a Galaxy S3 or a Galaxy S2, I can get it on T-Mobile because they make them for all of them.
Well, you know, the thing that I always look at, though, is when a new Android phone comes out is, okay, well, I got to wait for the root. I've got to wait for somebody to put out the mod because I want to know how that phone works when it's not, you know, all bloated up, you know, with the stuff that Sprint is going to deliver. So,
well, one thing about root that is going to change is that all of these next generation phones, you have to make sure that they have the capability to run Android 4, which is Ice Cream Sandwich, which is different than it used to be. So in the past, you could have a fairly underpowered Android phone run the latest version each time. So if you bought a phone and it had Eclair, and then you could root it and put Froyo on it, and then you could put Gingerbread after that, you can't do the same thing with Ice Cream Sandwich. So you have to make sure now the Galaxy S3 and the One X and the One S, I'm sure, have enough horsepower to run Ice Cream Sandwich and probably will officially get those. But, in fact, they all are right now. But going forward in the next versions of the operating system, you need to make sure that all of them have the capability to do it because they're making a break. Similar to what Apple did a while back, where they stopped support of the 3G in the original iPhone. So Android has done that now with the latest generation.
Mm-hmm. Or you could just say screw it and buy an iPhone.
So we have two different generations in the field right now. One that will always be on Gingerbread, and the other that will be, you know, Ice Cream Sandwich and above. So you have to choose wisely, I would think, and I would choose one that runs Ice Cream Sandwich. Because that one is more future-proof than, say, a nice phone, like the Galaxy S2, for instance. I don't think that will ever get even an unofficial Ice Cream Sandwich port because it just doesn't have the capability to run it.
I see.
So there won't be a Cyanogen Mod 9 for it.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, so we had to sneak in an Apple thing here into Gadget Fest, even though this doesn't exist yet. So really, does it belong in Gadget Fest?
Ultrabooks,
the Apple potential for a $799 Air. Yeah, I mean that's just a rumor, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people have been looking at the Apple line, and you know, been saying for education since they dropped the white plastic MacBook that used to be $899, and I think it was even less in education. I want to say it was $799 in education.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It was great machine, 13-inch. I had one of the original ones. Since they dropped that and they're forcing people to go to their $999, which I think in the education market is $899, 11-inch MacBook Airs, a lot of education is moving away from it. So a lot of people are saying they've got to do this or that end of the market will go to Ultrabooks.
Well, because GigaOm kind of threw water on this rumor, I will say that based on the people that I know at Apple in the education space and how schools, K-12 specifically, they don't even want to talk about Macs. They want to talk about iPads. iPad. So that kind of lends credence to the fact that Apple probably won't do it because education cares less about laptops now and more about tablets.
Right. And I think we'll see the iPad 2 will stay with us a lot longer than you might expect.
Yeah.
Because of that, because they want to have this entry level that's now $399. I can see in a year's time the iPad 2 still being around at $299. Mm-hmm. And that makes a really compelling entry entry-level tablet that's still very functional.
Well, that, you know, that lower-cost tablet meant a great deal. You know that we spent a great deal of time talking with Lisa Snyder, superintendent here at in Lakeville, and when we caught up at Mobile March, she was telling me that because of the price drop, the school system was able to get an additional 400 tablets. It was incredible.
That's great.
That is great. Yeah. You know what, though, I will say is having an iPad 1 and going to an iPad 3 or the new iPad, mm-hmm. I had many apps that I'd go back and forth on tech support with them because the apps were crashing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I cleaned off the iPad, backed it up, and then, you know, reloaded the operating system and all the apps and so forth. And the damn things would still crash. And I was like, God, what's going on? So I get the new iPad, nothing crashes. And it's because A, the processor's a little bit faster, but also there's more RAM. And I think that, you know, that there's sort of the march of progress. It's going to be interesting because the apps end up taking advantage of the newest operating system and the newest specs on the machine. And I'm just wondering if that's going to, you know, over time kill it, except I don't know if you heard, but the iPad 2, Apple just started to slip in a new processor.
Yeah. Yeah. I mentioned that last week.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
And the battery life is a lot improved because it's a smaller die on the new processor.
So maybe they'll slip in more RAM in a year. So maybe to your point, that'll keep that thing alive for a lot longer.
Well, I don't even think they're going to need to slip in more RAM because, you know, 16 gig is, for that size of the screen is probably okay for an educational application because they're not going to be running 100 apps on the darn thing.
Right.
You know, they're going to probably be running just a page full of apps that more than likely won't be very big. Most of them anyway, they might have pages on there, but so I don't think that RAM is really going to be a huge consideration. And if you look at what they still sell an 8 gig iPod Touch. So, you know, that should be 16, but they've consciously decided not to do that because, you know, I'm sure that they sell a lot of the 32s because of that. You know, if you look at the value, it's going from 8 to 32 is $100. Most people would take that, you know, take that jump.
Yeah, right.
And so I would think it would be much more likely that they'll drop 16 in the new iPads and they'll be, you know, 32, 64, and 128. And maintain the 16 for the iPad 2 at some crazy low price,
right.
Which I think will maybe this Christmas even might be $349 just to make it even more, you know, attractive as a Christmas present.
Is that what you're going to get me?
Wait a minute. You already have the new iPad. You
know, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
I got to believe that there is there's a closet at Steve's house where there's just nothing but old Apple products, you know, because he just changes it. Like I change underwear. My God. It's where Apple gadgets go to die.
Well, you know what I found really interesting is, you know, I've got my MacBook Air 11 inch and I was toying with the idea of upgrading because of Thunderbolt and because my monitor's starting to go bad. I've got the Apple Cinema display that has the LCD leaking, you know, so it starts to have little shadows and stuff at the top. Mm-hmm. And so I realized I'm hardly using my Air. When I leave, I take my iPad with me like 90% of the time. And the only time I really need the Air is if I know that I'm going to have to FTP into a client's server or something and do some tweaking. And those sorts of things, but mostly I just take my iPad. And so I found that kind of interesting. So I haven't upgraded and I may not for some time. Oh, for those of you who have a desktop computer, whether it's a tower it's got to be a tower because I think that's all they make for desktops pretty much. But you got Mac Minis, but I've been exploring, solid state drives, SSDs, and they're coming down in price. And in fact, what I'm going to end up doing with my Mac Pro is I got a 500 gig as my boot drive right now, but I'm going to pull that out and put a 256 gigabyte SSD in there because I've got like 3 terabytes of, on other drives. And so I'll keep all my files on those other drives and just put all the apps and everything else on the SSD. And I've watched a couple of videos online now, and my, you know, because OS X Lion reopens all the apps from the save state from the last session. Sometimes it'll take, you know, 4 or 5 minutes for my machine to boot. And so I watched a video of a guy who had done exactly this, put an SSD in there, had 10 apps, you know, Photoshop and InDesign, all these apps that were opening, iTunes and so on and so forth. And he took his 4 minute 20 second boot time down to 56 seconds. And he said everything he opens, everything he does is just like 10x faster. And so you can really breathe a lot of life into an old machine by replacing the drive with an SSD.
Yeah.
So
remember OS 9, or I think it was OS 8 too, or yeah, 8 and 7, where they had the extensions that would load when you'd boot?
Yes.
Remember those? And you'd have on your screen, you'd have whatever extensions that you were running. There was a, when you were describing this speed thing, there was a presentation at Siebold San Francisco back in the 90s, and the presenter turned the Mac on, and it, that sequence started, and it literally the entire screen filled up with extensions. And as he was talking, it took like 3 minutes before it filled up the entire screen, and then his desktop loaded. It was just hilarious.
Oh my God.
So it we've come a long way since then.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Well, let's skip over the upcoming events because we've already talked about those, and in the last, nothing's really changed.
But I'll be coming to you from Drupal Camp next week. So,
will you really?
Yeah.
Will we have a remote at Drupal Camp?
Yeah, I guess.
Are you seriously going?
I'm here at the University of Minnesota. At Drupal Camp.
It sounds like all the ships at sea.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to a UFO camp. We're looking for triangular unidentified flying objects.
Oh, you're moving into triangular. Oh, good.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah. So,
yeah. All right. This is Minneapolis. You're hearing Drupal Camp.
I'm looking forward to that coverage.
Yeah. Oh, you are not.
Should be good. Should be good. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening to the Minivade Bing podcast. And
what was that? Did you say the Bing podcast?
No, I did in fact trip over my tongue. We can't hear you very well, Tim.
Yeah, what happened, Tim? You blew out your mic when you were doing the.
Oh no!
Oh no! Oh well. Well, listen, we'll catch up with you next week again on
the Minivade Gang podcast.
Bye bye.
Take care.